I'm Bill Radke. This is KUOW's The Record.
I'm realistic enough to know that I can meet a violent end. I live every day under the threat of death. And I have no illusions about it. There are enough sick people in the world for me to come to a violent end, just as other leaders have come to a violent end. But I don't have any fear about it. You can't function if you just go around day in and day out fearing death.
50 years ago today, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and killed in Memphis, Tennessee. Before his death, King famously said that he knew he might meet a violent end, as you just heard. What does MLK mean today, 50 years after his death? How have we grappled with his legacy? Here with me is one of the leaders of a campaign to rename King County. We'll talk more about that. Former King County Executive Ron Sims, welcome.
Good afternoon. It's great to be on KUOW.
And current King County Council member Larry Gossett, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks for coming. So, Larry Gossett, 50 years ago, where were you, and would you tell us how you got the news that Martin had been killed?
On April 4, 1968, I was in the King County Jail, having been arrested at 8:30 that morning for being one of the lead organizers of the Franklin High School sit-in on March 29th. Where Franklin principal had kicked two black girls out of school for wearing their hair natural, and two black males out of school for having a fight with a white kid. White kid went back to class. They got kicked out. So the black student said, enough is enough. So I was in the jail at about 1:30 p.m. Seattle time when it was announced that Dr. King had been killed.
How did you hear that, over a PA, or how did it reach your ears?
It was on the radio, and the King County guards or corrections officers told us, and the word just got out, and then the black prisoners wanted to beat up the white prisoners, and we said, wait a minute, man. The reason King died is because he was building a poor people's campaign where he was getting poor blacks, whites, Latinos, Asian, and Native folks together. That would be ridiculous insult to his legacy for y'all to do that. And that we all sat down and talked about things that should happen in the King County Jail to make it better for the prisoners in there. And I think that ended up being a good tribute to him.
So there could have been violence.
There could have, and there was out on the streets of Seattle. Seattle was one of the 110 cities that had that faced racial rebellion on that night, because if you can kill the best of us, oh my God, what possibility do the rest of us have for having a better future?
Former King County Executive Ron Sims, what do you remember 50 years ago?
I was in a college class, and somebody walked in and handed the teacher a note, and the teacher read us the note. And the reaction of the class was pretty powerful. A lot of anger immediately. There was no the whole class. Those were the days where it was hard to go to college unless you were really an activist in many respects. It had grown.
Most people were progressives.
But the reaction was very emotional with the students. And a teacher detected that and knew it and knew how to walk us through it. But really angry. It was like, why? He was a hero to many of us. We were, at that time, even beginning to demonstrated on the Vietnam War. It was like a collapse of everything we believed needed to be done in the country. You took his life because you wanted to end the civil rights movement. But with those times, we were also involved in the women's rights, anti-Vietnam War. There was an emergence. And all of a sudden, it was like you wanted to, that there were forces out there that were going to steal away our dreams. But the teacher handled the anger well, the anguish. It was anguish that bordered on being angry. The professor handled it really well by asking us to think about what we wanted in the world. A nice way to descend us from our immediate emotional reaction to basically challenging our fundamental values about what would be right in the world. The very next day when we were in class, the teacher asked us what we have thought about needed to be changed in the world, to allow us a time to express our opinions about the things that we wanted to see corrected. It was so beautifully done. And we weren't having to read a book. That told me that professors sometimes, if they listen to their students and allow their students to express themselves, they can find out that we are not just receivers of information. We were processing it, wanting to know how to apply it. But it was so well done. That weekend, I went home to see my parents. I was still angry. I was really angry at that point because I was away from campus. My father and my mother were civil rights leaders in Spokane, so I got used to their constant demonstrations, which seemed to be weekly. You know, the first time I ever got spit on was in a demonstration with them, to see a system designed to stop African-American progress, to see Bull Connor invited to Spokane to give a speech.
Bull Connor was the Southern police
correct.
Chief.
He was invited to Spokane.
Birmingham.
Invited by a group to come in and speak, and we demonstrated at that. But my father let me show rage and then said to me, if you show rage and continue it, you have been stopped already and the assassin has won. And you need to make a decision about whether your views are going to prevail over time or is the assassin's views. And you need to make that decision. At that point, I calmed down and realized to devote my resources to continue to make change.
What, Councilmember Gossett, what are some of your memories of the man, Dr. King?
I'm one of those that got the opportunity to march with Dr. King in an anti-war march in New York City when I was a VISTA volunteer in 66. In 67, I was a VISTA in Harlem. So it was a magnificent inspiration to see Martin out with all the grassroots demonstrators. About 10,000 people came out of Harlem to join, maybe 170,000 whites. And for the downtown New York, I loved the energy and the unity and what he said to all of us about war and peace and justice that day. But the first time I met Martin Luther King Jr., and it had an impact on me, I was a sophomore at Garfield High School, and Martin Luther King on November 8th, 1961, came to speak to us. Well, he came to Seattle to see if he could generate an open house movement for open housing. Reverend McKinney, who had gone to Morehouse, undergraduate with him. Invited him to come to Seattle to help spark open housing. And I was really struck by the fact that he said that Seattle has now moved up to be the fifth most segregated city in all the land. 88% of the black people in Seattle live in the central area. And that's absolutely unfair. And we're here to make sure the blacks and other minorities in your community get a fair chance to live wherever it is they want to live and can afford to live. So those are the things I remember most about him, besides what he said at the beginning of this broadcast. Every day from 1967 to 68, he got threats against his life. I don't know about Ron, but that would have a big impact on me. But he said I wasn't scared, and he wasn't, and he carried the movement on. Tremendous example for all Americans.
Personal memories, Ron Sims?
More television, more news. I never met him personally. It was more just reading. Because there were so many, he ignited so many other demonstrators. Remember I told you, my parents were marching all the time. They were organizing them all the time. So I got used to marching. But you felt validated because it wasn't just my parents taking on the politics of Spokane. It was a part of something larger. So you realize when you were marching in the marches my parents organized, which were frequent, and it's sometimes pretty challenging in regards to the city's response and the business community's response and the community response. But I never saw him. It was just a matter of, you know, that he was sanctioning what they were doing. It wasn't like my parents were crazy. It was just, wow, this is kind of fun. When you're young, you look at being spirited in those demonstrations. I never saw him personally. But it was more than that, though. If you look at it, he was an icon. And so you don't take a loss of an icon well, because you assumed that you would have an umbrella as you, even in college, so that the things that you were fighting for instance, as the University of Washington was doing, the African-American students were saying, it's time to realize that we're on this campus. At my campus, we were saying the African-Americans want to be known on this campus. We're not digits. We're not just people who walk in and out of your lives and you don't understand who we are. So there was a huge movement of people of color on campuses to fundamentally change higher ed. And so you felt validated in doing that. It wasn't like you were could be dismissed. You could ask to be understood and appreciated, that you would appear in curriculum and in books, and you would see professors and students who look like you during a period of time when it seems so commonplace now. It was not commonplace when I was in college.
I mentioned that in the 80s, that King County, there was a group of county council members who passed this motion to rename the county in honor of Dr. King, and it took almost 20 years before the state legislature recognized that motion. Mm-hmm. Who was King County originally named for, Ron Sims, and what did it mean to have that changed?
The county was named after a vice president who was never sworn in. He died of pneumonia before he was sworn in. He was Rufus Devane King from Selma, Alabama. And Councilmember Bruce Lang walked down the hall one day after reading an article written by Shelby Skates. He's passed away, but he was a columnist.
Yeah.
And every Martin Luther King anniversary, he wrote, "Why hasn't King County changed his name?" So Bruce Lang, a Republican from East King County, came to my office and said, "Why don't we do this?" And I said, "Wow. I don't know. Let's go do it." And so and it was really interesting, the politics even on the council. It was a 5-4 vote. But there was a very conservative council member from West Seattle, a guy named council member Bob Grieve, on a day that we thought we had the votes to pass, who said, "You don't have the votes, but if you wait 2 weeks, you will, because I'll be back from my vacation." So we waited for Councilmember Bob Grieve to return from his vacation, and it was adopted. Rufus Devane King was put on the ticket during that election because he supported slavery. So I called the library of Selma, Alabama, and I ended up talking to a black librarian. So I explained to her what we were doing. So I asked her for research on Rufus Devane King and also anything she could tell me about Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's march in Selma. And it had to be a daily call. She sent us all this information. So the day that we adopted it, I called her before I called anybody else to say, "You know, we just adopted the name change." She cried on the phone. Mm. She just cried. I've never heard a librarian cry about anything. She was an African-American librarian. This was really important to her as a librarian in Selma to realize that an entire county made a decision to change the name. And then my neighbor, Adam Klein, along with some people in the House, but Adam persisted at putting legislation in to do the formal name change by the state.
Yeah, I want to ask about that. No movement was made to recognize it more broadly until the late 90s. And then I understand, Councilmember Gossett, you moved to replace King County's logo with an image of Dr. King. And what happened?
That began, I have to give credit to Eddie Wright Jr., who's a longtime black community activist here in Seattle. In 1999, I did not know he was going to do this. At our annual Martin Luther King celebration at Garfield High School, matter of fact, Seattle is the only city in the nation that every year from 1983 to this past January has done a community-wide tribute to Dr. King, where 5,000 to 10,000 people participated. But anyway, on that day, he said, very few people know that we already have the name of Martin Luther King as the namesake, at least by the county council. We want you, Councilmember Gossett, to, by that time, I think Ron was a county executive in 99. We want you to start a movement to change the logo of our county from an imperial crown to the image of Dr. King. And like Ron just said, it took us to 2005 to get that done because we couldn't generate enough support. The county council was still 7-6 Republicans over Democrats. And Kent Pullen told me when I first took the ordinance changing the logo into his office that this is going to go into my desk and there it will remain because we don't want to deal with it. I said, sir, it might go on your desk now, but it won't remain that. But like he said, Adam Klein called me every year to go down on a specific date to Olympia to testify to get the state legislature to formally change the name because we found out that only the state has the legal right to change the name of the county. Mm-hmm. And they finally did that in 2005.
So,
and then we moved forward after that. I think it was it took us about a year to change the name, excuse me, the logo from an imperial crown, King's crown. Mm-hmm. It's not very democratic symbol mm-hmm. to an image of Dr. King.
The final question I have for each of you today, you mentioned Councilmember Gossett, Seattle being the fifth most segregated city in 1961.
Yes, sir.
Executive Sims, you talked about being spit on as a young man. A lot of people are talking today. We're comparing then and now. How do you reflect on a comparison in this country between 68 and 2018?
You know, much has changed, but there's also, if you talk to my sons, for instance, they will tell you that if you say that race doesn't matter, it still matters. And so my wife and I, when we go to restaurants, we judge restaurants based on the first look we see from a person's face, because you can tell very quickly whether or not you are welcome or not by a look.
From a maitre d', the server,
the person welcomes you. You know right away that, you know, there's still restaurants in Seattle that would prefer you not be the customer. And you walk in there and you could see it. So we never go back for a second time. The idea, why be insulted twice? But it's, so there's still a lot of work to do. Seattle still has a lot of work to do. You can talk about Seattle's demographics all you want, but still in the south end of town is where a number of African Americans and Asian Americans used to live. Now they're moving out of Seattle because they can't afford to stay here. So you see literally people fleeing of color to the suburbs and South County and leaving Seattle. And so there are times you just shake your head and say, wow, all we fought for. There's a wonderful site. And the University of Washington, if you go to their webpage, you can type in the top, Segregated Seattle, and you will see the best database for Seattle. It's done by a group of professors here. It's updated. It gives you the entire history of racial segregation in Seattle, why it was established, what the rules were, what people were assigned to do, how it was implemented. And I don't think we ever completely broke through that. I used to, when I worked for HUD, we were the enforcement of fair housing. And I was negotiating with a city, another state, and they said, here's where we are. You're negotiating a consent order with us, which I was doing. And they said, so what are you going to do about Seattle? Because their data is worse than ours. And I said, no one's filed complaint. So here you had a very liberal area that kind of accepted as norm what I was called where African Americans live, where Asian Americans live, where whites would live, where fluent people would live. Just did it because we felt there couldn't be any race here, but there was clearly a fair housing value. There was clearly a fair housing violation at that time here, but nobody had filed a complaint, so therefore I couldn't work on settlement.
And Councilmember Larry Gossett,
yes.
The state of racism in Seattle 2018?
Yeah, I absolutely concur with Ron Sims in stating that race still matters. It's still a significant divide between white and black households here in the greater Seattle community compared to the way things were in 1968 when Dr. King was brutally murdered. By way of example, I'd like to draw your and the listening audience attention to an article written by Eugene Balk, who is the FYI writer, feature writer for the Seattle Times, did an article on February 12, 2017 that said, essentially, Seattle has now the fastest growing economy in all the land. The average household income is $80,000. It's only second to San Francisco, but it's growing faster than San Francisco's the household incomes in Seattle. Then in the fourth paragraph, he said, but although black households' income is growing, it's only moved from $33,000 up to $37,000, more than not even as much as half of the average income of white households in the greater Seattle area. And that's a huge economic gap. And we still have problems like 37% last Friday of the people in the King County Jail are black for youth in the detention center. And much of it's unfair and based on poverty, not just race. It's 55% last Thursday, although the numbers are way down because of the work that Ron Sims, me, and others have done. The disproportionality is great as ever. I do need to say real quickly, though, that for household income, the black middle class has grown pretty significantly in Seattle from 68 to today. We were about 48% poor black households in Seattle in 68. Today, that number's down to 23% of our household poor. But that's where most of our young kids live. Ed Murray said just 2 years ago that 55% of all black kids in Seattle live in households below the poverty level. So we have a lot of challenges.
Larry Gossett is a member of the King County Council. He met Dr. Martin Luther King. He was telling us stories. He's the founder of the Black Student Union on the UW campus. Thanks for coming in today on the 50th anniversary of that bullet in Memphis. Thank you.
The pleasure was mine, and I also have a lot of pleasure being the president of the University of Washington Black Student Union the same year Ron Sims was the president of the Central Washington State College, BSU.
And Ron Sims, former council member, King County executive, executive at Housing and Urban Development in Washington, D.C., and longtime Seattleite. Thanks for you coming in today as well.
Thank you for asking us here, and thank you for KOW's commitment to let the world know that we have a lot of work to do, but we have accomplished a lot. It's great journalism, and thank you for that.
You're listening to The Record on KOW. Back in just a moment.
Anybody here see my old friend Mark?